a near-death experience, and a whole new set of challenges. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome into the Arrow News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. This is the second of three parts of my interview with Vance Breese, a motorcycle racer who suffered a high-speed crash in a streamliner on the Bonneville Salt Flats in 1995 and was declared dead a short time later. Today, Vance is a pilot, but in the time immediately after the crash, that outcome would have been an unbelievable prediction.
Well, they cut me out of the streamliner because they were afraid to break my neck, and I had a big roll cage over the top. And one eye was really swollen up. The whole backside of my helmet had a big soft spot in it, and apparently I'd hit it really hard. And they waited for a helicopter to come. And I don't remember this, but I apparently argued with them about not wanting to go in a helicopter because they were dangerous. And then once they did get me in the helicopter, apparently I asked them to go down the course so I could see the crash marks. And I don't remember that. And they flew me to Salt Lake City, and Salt Lake City's a teaching hospital. And in fairly short order, I had no brain activity. And my friends tried to explain to them that that was normal for me, but they declared me dead anyway, even though my heart was still going on its own. Their feeling was it was best to just disconnect this guy. Now, because it's a teaching hospital, they do what's called protocol, which is where you try to save, you do what you do to save a live guy practicing on a dead guy. And here's a particularly good dead guy because he's still breathing. And so this seemed like the perfect opportunity. So they got a surgeon and a whole bunch of interns together, and they were in this operatory theater, and this guy presumed that he was working on a corpse. You know, he'd seen all the stuff, and I think he, in fact, had added his opinion to the fact that I was not viable. And the first thing that you do when somebody's had a head injury is you drill a burr hole to relieve the pressure from the swelling brain, what they call a subdural hematoma. And apparently when he did that, I reached up and grabbed him around the throat and told him in coarse language to not ever do that again. And I have to think he's probably working on Jackasses and Sandy now rather than continuing his medical career, because you just don't expect to get assaulted by a corpse. And apparently my grip was so strong it took two interns to pull my hand off of his throat, and I left marks.
Okay, so now you have been obviously not being given the attention that somebody they thought was viable might receive. How did the next few hours, days, weeks of your life go? I mean, what new reality faced you?
When you lose blood circulation to a nerve, it dies and it doesn't grow back. And so I'm now blind in my left eye. And if they drilled the burr hole sooner, I might not be blind in my left eye. But they only last for 20 minutes, so it's hard to know if that really made any difference or not. And we have no idea why I can see out of the right one. And my vision is somewhat limited in the right one, too. I have kind of tunnel vision. After 3 days in ICU, and they really wanted me to leave because apparently I was causing problems, I had a meeting with the doctor, and he told me that I'd never be able to speak in complete sentences, that I had what's called aphasia, and that my brain injury was so severe that that I'd never be able to put words together, and that I'd never walk unassisted, and probably wouldn't be able to stand without leaning on something because my balance was so severely affected by it. And they suggested that I'd have emotional problems and put me on an airplane with my sweetheart and sent me back to California. And I don't remember any of that, and I don't remember the first day back when an optometrist told me that my eye was going to shrivel up like a pea and I needed to just get a glass one right away. And it turns out that that hasn't happened either, and this was in 1995, and so obviously it's had enough time to do the P thing. And so I started working really hard at trying to get better. I wasn't able to save the sight in the one eye, but I do crazy exercises to manage things. Like I had I'm not sure what you call it, but it's a board that goes on a roller, and you balance on it and roll back and forth, and it helps you with your balance. And I hung a wiffle ball from a string, and I poked the wiffle ball with a cue stick, because that would give me tactile reinforcement for the visual decisions that I'd made. And that seemed to work really well and seemed to help my balance. And I'd walk a lot and do a lot of stuff. I had made some bad business decisions, though, so my fiscal life became more difficult. But it all worked out in the end.
You got involved with an acquired brain injury group. If I can recall what I remember of that part of your life, that has made a big difference for you.
Well, the thing that was wrong that I did is I tried to hide my injury. And it was difficult to separate out the results of the injury from what's normal. Because, for instance, I don't multitask well. Well, a lot of people don't multitask. I'm in the 17th percentile for unrelated short-term memory, but everybody forgets things. And so a brain injured person generally can't block out extraneous noise as well. And I didn't know any of this. So learning about it allowed me to know what I could fix and what I couldn't fix, and what to address and how to address it and how to approach the world. And it turns out that most people, if you tell them that you have a brain injury, then they'll understand that maybe you're not just stupid. And so that helped a lot to allow me to go forward. I really wanted to race my streamliner again, but my neurologist finally told me that head injuries are cumulative, and if I did that, whatever progress I'd made would clearly get set back if I landed on my head again. That's when I decided to get into aviation. I started with helicopters, but because I can't tell how far away the ground is, doing an auto to the ground in a helicopter is kind of scary.
At this point, obviously, you must have overcome whatever feelings you'd had earlier in your life about not wanting to go near a field that your dad had been involved in.
Well, he wasn't into rotorcraft much, and so I felt that this was safe.
Did you imagine him looking down as a white puffy cloud, smacking his forehead and saying, "What's this kid doing?
What on earth is he doing?" But he was long dead by then, and I do call on him from time to time when I have no idea how to keep from smashing into the ground, and or how to manage a particular situation. And as little as we interacted, it's remarkable the amount of stuff that I can imagine him saying.
Well, especially having come through something that may have taken some of your memories from you, or at least it would for a lot of people.
Well, the particular challenge I have with memory is unrelated short-term memory. And what that means is that it's like Alzheimer's. I can remember stuff that happened to me when I was a kid, but I may have met somebody 5 minutes ago and I can't remember their name. And once again, that's something that happens to everybody, but it happens to me more. And if I can relate it to something, that's one of the ways that I can work around it. And so I try to have a story that goes with everything.
And he does. Imagine now that you want to get an FAA medical. More of the Vance Breese story in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Piperjet.
Pipersport.
Pipermatch.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Freedom through innovation. It's what led us to develop Cirrus Flying 2.0, the framework for a bold new take on private aviation. And as a result, the gap between the aircraft we produce and those of our competitors continues to widen. Cirrus knows where the personal aircraft industry is headed. We're already there.
Welcome back to the ANN Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Vance Breese, who survived a motorcycle wreck that left him declared dead and has gone on to become a 700-hour private pilot. More than a decade after his near-fatal crash at Bonneville, Vance was trying, despite his unique challenges, to become a helicopter pilot. There was this one problem.
At that time, I was about to solo a helicopter, and I couldn't get a medical. And they felt that having blind helicopter pilots was not in the best interest of the public, and they also were concerned about my brain injury. They felt that flying a helicopter in particular was a multitasking experience. And when the medical kept bouncing, we kept sending it back in, it would bounce again. And finally, the Western Region surgeon for the FAA just flat said no. He spent 45 minutes telling me no, that he was doing me a favor, not letting me fly. And I pointed out to him that he'd studied me for 2 years. And after that, did he really think I was just going to give up and go away? Or did he think he'd be filling out paperwork until he retired? And after a very long pause, he decided to allow a demonstrated ability medical check ride. This was also after he asked me, do you actually know how to fly anything? And I told him I did not. I was not proficient enough to fly anything. And he said, well, fine. If you do it within the next 2 months, you can have a demonstrated ability medical check ride. So it seemed like gyroplanes would be a good thing to do it in. So I found a designated examiner, and he was a gyroplane enthusiast. And of course, I didn't know how to fly it, but I found a gyroplane that they'd let me fly. And they gave him a book-length thing of all the stuff he was supposed to test me on. Things like, how far away is that freeway? And of course, being the cheater that I am, the night before, I had gone around in my car and measured everything. So whatever we were over, and I had notes on my arm, and whatever we were over, then I knew how far away it was. And so he said, how far is the freeway? And I knew this is out in the desert, Buckeye, Arizona, and all the roads are equal. And so I knew over this road we were 1 mile from the freeway. And he looks at me and he says, how many yards? Now, I'm not a football enthusiast, and so I had to calculate in my mind, let's see, 5,280 divided by 3. And then I came up with an answer after that. And of course, at this time, there's 5 airports on the frequency we were on, the CTAF. And so I'm trying to sort them out. I'm trying to fly an aircraft that I have no idea how to fly, both straight and level and without doing anything too squirrely in the direction that I've been told to fly it. And then he told me, well, count down in yards as we get closer to the freeway. And at that moment, the intercom failed. And so I'm flying something where you have your left hand on the throttle and your right hand on the stick, and I'm supposed to show him on my fingers, count down in yards how far it is to the freeway. And there were other tests like that to find out just how mentally defective I was, and I had to talk on the radio in an intelligent way. And of course, that's like a foreign language, which brings me back to the unrelated short-term memory. Learning to talk on the radio is the absolute pinnacle of what you don't want to do if you have poor unrelated short-term memory. And so then we landed, and it was not an elegant landing. A gust of wind picked it back up, and I put it down again. And he jumped out of the aircraft and did a little kind of Irish jig and spun around and said, I've cheated death once again, and disappeared into his office. And I felt that my chances of ever getting a license were done, because I really pushed on the regional surgeon as hard as I could. I pushed on this guy, on the people who owned the gyroplane. It was unlikely that I'd get another chance. And a half an hour later, he came out with a statement of demonstrated ability that says that I can fly. And so then I began to learn to fly gyroplanes, because I thought that would be a good place to go. And unfortunately, as I said, I made some business mistakes. I turned over a lot of things to a woman that I married, and I woke up one day $2.3 million below zero. Of course, that made it more difficult to pursue aviation, because aviation costs money.
Tomorrow, how his introduction to gyroplanes changed his plans for flying, what's happened since, and his ambitious plan for the next few years. Hear the third and final installment of the Vance Breese story tomorrow. If you missed part one, it's in the October 5th archive. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.